Hello everyone, welcome to part 4 and the final part of the Bond Basics series. You can check out the link to the previous sessions in the video description. In the previous session, Wilson spoke about what duration means and how you can generate returns by playing duration and actively managing it. In this session, Wilson will be talking about accruals, that is, generating returns by managing the securities in your portfolio. Wilson will also talk about the variables to be considered and creating a methodology when it comes to choosing securities. The next voice you hear will be of Wilson's.
Thank you. So welcome to Learning Briefcase. In this program, we are going to talk about our sources of returns, and more specifically on the sources of returns that come from income. I'm going to do a little rerun of what we discussed in our previous three episodes, just to bring everybody on to the same page. In our previous episodes, we discussed that there are two main sources of returns. There is what we call income, and there is a capital gains. Most debt funds try to generate returns from either these two sources of returns. In the debt parlance, we use the sources of returns as yield to maturity or mark to market. Yield to maturity is that proportion which will indicate how much a portfolio will earn out of interest or income. The mark to market is basically a reflection of how an actively managed portfolio can generate returns by capital gains. The mark to market portion of the portfolio normally has two parts also. There is a capital gains, but with capital gains also comes capital loss. In the previous episode, we discussed how you could look at capital gains or duration management or actively managing duration to generate returns from capital gains in your debt portfolio. In this portion of the episode, we're going to discuss about how we can generate returns by managing the yield to maturity portion of the portfolio. In normal parlance, this is called accrual management. And accrual management, as the word suggests, normally indicates the fact that there is an income that will accrue into the portfolio, and managing this income for highest return is what the fund manager seeks to do in a debt income fund. If we look at accrual, the lay parlance or the word which we use for accrual to denote accrual is yield. Now, a person will receive yield only when he pays a price for it, which means that any bond has a face value, and the face value has a committed coupon that will be received into the portfolio. Now, the price of this bond could change because the bond gets tradable, which means along with the price of the bond changing, since the coupon remains the same, the yield in the market could change basis on the change in price. Previous episode, we discussed what are the factors that deal with the change in price and how these impact yields. But suffice to say, for this example, we're going to look at yield as the major proponent of the sources of return. Now, when we look at yield, we normally say that the reason you get yield is that there is an expectation in an investor that when he invests, he should return, his money should return more than capital. When I say more than capital, what it means is that the capital keeps depreciating yearly because of inflation. In some economies, the inflation can be high, and therefore, since interest rates or yields are linked to inflation, the interest rates in that economy is much higher. On the other hand, in some economies, the inflation is low, and therefore, the interest rates that you receive in those economies could be lower. Now, when your yield is equal to inflation, you basically do not get any substantial return over and above inflation. to get a return that is above inflation, or in what we call real returns, you need to take a little level of risk. This combination of risk or returns over risk, over inflation because of risk, is what we will call the yield that a person receives in his portfolio. YTM, as we consider YTM, is the measure of this. What we're looking at here is that what is the net yield that the customer will get or the investor will get when he looks at not only inflation, but the real return he gets over inflation. All investors looking for real rate of return or additional rate of return has to perforce look at taking on additional risk. If you want to increase YTM in your portfolio, if you want to increase the income you want to get in your portfolio, you have to take risk. Now, we've explained in previously that there are different types of risk we can take. There's default risk, there's credit risk. We're just going to run over the next few minutes on the different types of risk that the portfolio can take. If we look at the construct of yield versus time, you will notice that your expectation is as your time period increases, as the risk rate of uncertainty increases because of longer time periods, so too you would expect that there will be an increase in YTM or increase in the portfolio yield you can expect. There's a reason for this, because as you hold longer period in time, as you hold for a longer period in time, your expectation is that the uncertainty involved in investing for a longer period of time will ensure that you expect a higher rate of return for your investment. A good way to explain this is to plot the yield that you will expect over a longer maturity. In the example which is on the screen, you can see that we have plotted the yield to maturity curve. This is called the yield curve. In this case, the yield curve looks a little parabolic, and I will get into the reason why it looks a little parabolic in a few minutes. But what we are trying to show here is the reflection of the expectation of higher yield as your time holding period increases. The differential in this, the differential between two different points on the maturity line, is the difference between the risk perception for a longer holding period, which means in this particular example, we have showcased that if you hold it in the shorter period of time, your expected return is little lower, but the longer and longer period you hold, the expected returns or expected yield you expect from a portfolio would increase. Why is this? This is if you look at the formula which we expounded last episode, we said that there is a time value for money, and as your maturity increases, you want to add this time value of money into the yield, which means your yield will reflect this time value of money, and therefore you will see that as the holding period increases, your yield goes up. Now, there is also a different kind of spread, which is called the yield spread. The yield spread explains to you what is the risk you take based on default. As we go ahead, we'll talk about this differential and what is the premium you get for taking riskier papers. My explanation previously showcased the fact that as your time increases, your time spread increases. This is a natural corollary. In this particular graph, we showcase the yield curve as a straight line. In normal situations, the yield curve is not a straight line. The reason the yield curve is not a straight line is because we break up the holding periods into what we call short-term holdings and long-term holdings. Short-term holdings are normally holdings for about a year. The reason we find that you get a lower return for a short-term holding instrument versus a longer-term holding instrument is that the fact that when we look at short-term instruments, we can have the ability to predict or we have the ability to forecast what can happen in the next 1 year. With our ability to forecast over the next 1 year and the visibility of risks, automatically the returns are lower than investing for a longer period of time where the visibility becomes more opaque and we are not able to predict what the risks may occur a year, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, or 4 or 5 years from now. In the example I have shown you on the graph on the screen, you can see a yield curve in March 2018, exactly a year ago. And we can see that we have plotted the yield for different government securities based on their maturity. We start with a 7.28 government security, which is maturing in 2019, and end with a 8.13 government security, which is going to mature in 2045. What we notice is that the government security that is maturing in 2019, I'm talking about this graph, which is a year old, has a much lower rate of return, which is a 6.6%, as compared to a maturity paper, which is 2 years hence, which is 7.68 to 2020, which will be approximately at 6.85. If you look at increasing the maturity basket from 19 to 2023, you will see there's a substantial increase in the expected coupon you get at that maturity basket, which means for a four year paper, your risk perception has increased, and because your risk perception has increased, you have charging a premium of approximately, or you expect a premium of approximately 1% more than what you would pay for a bond which is maturing 1 year hence. This is what we call a normal curve. The normal curve basically explains how the time risk increases as your holding period increases. One way to play for higher yield to maturity is to take longer time maturity bonds, which means one way to increase your YTM is to increase your holding period. As we can see from the graph here, you can see that if you had an option to invest, you could choose a 1 year holding period or you could choose a 5 year holding period. It is obvious from the graph that if you choose a 5 year holding period, you have increased your YTM by 1%. Fund managers use this as a means of increasing YTM or increasing accrual to the portfolio. The way we look at this ensures that as your holding period increases, your YTM also increases. However, if you notice from the graph, as you move further and further away, your yield curve tends to plateau out. There's a reason for this. The reason being that as your yield curve matures over a longer period of time, the time value of money of that period today actually reduces. And a normal function of the yield curve is that it will tend to plateau out after about 10 years. That is why when a fund manager invests, he normally looks at the maturity between 1 year to 10 years. Anything beyond that, the YTMs tend to be equal. Now, the discussion we are having right now is about normal yield curves. This, when I say normal yield curve, what it means is normally this is how a yield curve looks. It means that at the lower end of the yield curve, the interest rates are low or the yields are low, and at the higher end of the yield curves, your YTMs are higher, and that should be normal. But normal is not normal. You sometimes have exceptions to this. And this is where the things get interesting. Because if everybody is working on the assumption that the yield curve is normal, all fund managers would tend to invest on the longer end of the yield curve. However, based on economic cycles, economic factors, and economic outlooks, the yield curves in the market could change. The second thing impacting yield curves is just the demand supply. If everybody decided that, you know what, long-term yield curves look good, we're all going to buy long bonds, the price of the bond in the long market will automatically rise, thus reducing the yields and putting a downward pressure on the yield in the long end. Which means that because of demand supply situations, your yields could actually drop in the long section. This sometimes happens based on the yield curve itself. The yield curves are dependent on how the demand supply situation peaks out. We call the yield curve of a normal yield curve could either get steeper or it could flatten. When there is higher demand and lower supply, the yield curves tend to flatten and the YTMs drop over a period of time. However, when there's lower demand, the yield curve tends to rise. We can see this happening based on liquidity in the market. When the market is extremely liquid, your yield curves could tend to flatten out, which means that the cost of money, which is measured as yield, automatically drops. However, when there's less liquidity in the market and there's less money chasing bonds, the yield could go up because the price of money goes up. This is something that happens in normal situations. We could actually have a correlationship between the shape of the yield curve, its flattening and steepening, and the situation in the economic market or economic cycles. When a market is in recession, yield curves tend to steepen. Or when the market has less, when the market has less money, the yield curves tend to steepen. And when the market has sufficient money or more money, the yield curves tend to flatten. I've given you an example of what can happen to normal yield curves. Let us now look at other different types of yield curves. I place in front of you an example of what we call a flat yield curve. This is a unique yield curve in which the yield is actually same no matter where you position your buying. In this case, the yield of a 1 year bond is equal to 2 year bond, is equal to 5 year bond, is equal to 10 year bond. What would you do now? The normal situation that happens when this occurs is that people tend to move towards less riskier assets for the same yield. All things being equal, all risks being equal, we will move to the lowest maturity. In this particular example, since the maturity for a 1 year bond is similar to a 10 year bond, or a 5 year bond, you will automatically revert to 1 year bond because firstly it is safer and you can see the visibility. This is how fund manager position their YTM buying based on the yield curve. Let me move to another yield curve, which is called the inverted yield curve. This yield curve is obvious. This yield curve normally occurs when there's an expectation of recession that is going to hit the market. In this yield curve, you can notice that the shorter term yield is much lower than the longer term yield. If you were a fund manager, where would you put it? The shorter term yield is higher than the longer term yield. If you were a fund manager, where would you put yourself? Most people would move to the shorter end of the yield curve because remember that the longer the maturity, the more the perceived risk. Therefore, why would you go with a higher risk and a lower return when you can get a higher return with a so-called lower time risk by choosing a shorter period curve? Whenever you see a curve which is inverted, you tend to move towards the lower end of the curve. A third type of yield curve is something what we call abnormal yield curves, or in this example, I'm going to show a humped yield curve. And in the humped yield curve, what you see is that at some maturities, because of some policy action or because of some economic event, there is a hump in the yield curve. The idea at this point is to buy at top of the hump. The reason being that if you just look at the yield and you look at the maturity, it obviously makes sense to buy where the yield is highest. I want to end with a thumb rule about buying yield curves and maturities. The thumb rule is, no matter which type of yield curve, you look at the risk to return ratio. When we look at risk here, we are looking at time risk. Time risk is basically the holding period risk. What you see here is the higher the time risk, the higher the yield. However, there can be abnormal yield curves like inverted yield curves and flat yield curves. The goal of a fund manager is to go where the yield is highest. In this particular examples, or different examples, you can notice that in a normal yield curve, the highest yield is available at a larger maturity. In an inverted yield curve, the highest yield is available at a shorter maturity. In a flat yield curve, since the yield is similar across all maturities, you will tend to go with the lower risk. The rule for achieving higher accrual when you have different types of yield curve is thus, given the same level of risk, go for a higher yield. Given a higher level of risk, go for where the yield is maximized. This ended up portion on how to position your investment based on the shapes of a yield curve. We're now going to look at the other type of risk, the risk of default, or what we call credit risk. We obviously know that the safest person to invest, the safest instrument to invest in the Indian market is the government securities. The reason is that the government is sovereign and it is always solvent, which means that no matter what happens in the market, you are assured that you will receive your principal and your income. However, as you increase the risk from government securities to AAA, and similarly from AAA to AA and AA to single A, your expectation of yield automatically goes up. We see this in the graph that as for the same time duration, as your the credit risk increases, so does your credit spread, which means for the same time duration, you increase the YTM that is expected from the portfolio based on the risk that the portfolio is exposed to. Obviously, single A is more riskier than double A, and double A is more riskier than triple A, and triple A is obviously more riskier than GSEC. But how does this play out and why does this occur? If we look at the expectation of returns, you can see that most instruments are rated based on a perception of what is going to happen in the future. Now, there are different rating agencies available. Each rating agencies have different opinions. Please remember, rating is an opinion. It is not something that is what's going to happen. Which means that most rating agencies, when they rate a company, they assign a level of probability to the chance of default. There are different types of default. The default of completely losing principal, the delay of interest payments, or the delay of principal payments. Based on the chances of default, you can actually reduce the rating. When we talk about reducing rating, we go from AAA to AA, AA to single A, single A to triple B. In mutual funds, we have what we call investment grade and not speculative grade. Mutual funds are not allowed to invest in speculative grade instrument. Any instrument which is rated BBB and below, not BBB, any instrument that is rated below BBB is not considered as investment grade. In fact, most mutual funds do not veer very far away from single A instruments itself. Which means that when you look at mutual funds, we are also seeing that most mutual funds tend to remain in probably the best investment grade instruments available. However, ratings can change based on company factors, which means company doing well or doing badly. It can also happen because of macroeconomic events, political events, as well as economic environments. When these rating changes, automatically you will expect that the returns move downwards. Your rating moves downwards, and therefore the expectation of yield on that portfolio goes up. Now, there is a big spread for taking this risk. This is normally showcased in the portfolio YTMs, which you see in the fund fact sheets. You will notice that a portfolio which is a high concentration in single A normally has a little higher YTM than a portfolio which is all AAA. Does it mean that a AAA will default or a single A has more chance of default? That is obviously a scenario which can only play out over a long period of time. What we can know, however, is how these spreads move as time progresses. In the example I've shown you here, is we've plotted the way yields move over last 10 years. What you can notice is that even within the last 10 years, there have been cycles in the movement of yield spreads, which means at some point in time, yields contract, and at some point in time, yields spreads expand. This contraction and expansion of yield spreads are basis the economic condition that exists in the market. When the market is liquidity surplus, yield spreads tend to contract, which means that as there is more money chasing less instruments, the yields automatically fall. However, when markets become liquidity deficit, yield spreads tend to expand. Now, that is one way of looking at yield spreads. The other way of looking at yield spread is just risk perception. It could be that as the risk perception increases, the yield spreads will increase. And as the risk perception reduces, your yield spread actually reduces. I have plotted here the yield spread based on a yearly movement of yield spreads. We can also look at these yield spreads on a daily basis. The graph I showcased before you is how yield spreads have moved over the last 13 years. You can notice that sometimes there are shocks to the system which can increase our yield spreads drastically. The 2008-2009 is an example where there was a global recession which led to a spike in the interest rates, and thus you could see that expansion of yield spreads itself. However, as the risk perception withdrew, you could see that the yield spreads kept going down and plateaued. What you notice, however, is sometimes that a AA and a AAA and a single A could have the same yield. Like in 2017, that's when the risk perception almost disappears. Sometimes it may happen that a single A and a double A perception of risk reduces and actually comes closer, as in 2014 and 2015. A fund manager investing for YTM not only pays attention to the time maturity, but also pays attention to what's happening to spreads in the market. He looks at the scenario and checks whether it is opportune at this point in time to be in a AAA bond versus a AA bond based purely on yield curves. The second, he can also predict that the risk return trade-off may be in favor of a more riskier bond because the spreads are substantially high, and thus position the portfolio in that spread. Buying YTM is function of many things. It is not a function only of saying that we should go with the most riskiest product, which is a single A bond or a double triple B bond, but also see that does the risk return pay off in your favor. By doing this, you can actually position your portfolio not only from a risk perspective, but also from a return perspective. I want to close this discussion with looking at upgrades and downgrades. What does upgrades and downgrades mean? It means that imagine that you bought a AAA bond, but the scenarios, economic scenarios and the company scenarios actually deteriorate over a period of time, as in 2016. And your AAA bond now gets downgraded. The AAA bond has now become a AA bond. A person who has purchased a AAA bond is expecting a AAA YTM for the rest of his life. However, because of the downgrade and is now moving to a single A bond, the expected YTM for a double A or a single A bond is much higher than a AAA bond, which means that the price of that bond will have to readjust to make good the new reality. As we can notice from this graph, there are scenarios in time when the risk perception increases or when the risks in the economy increases, and thus the downgrades increase over a period of time. A classic example was 2014 and in some cases 2016 and 2017. However, there may be other situations where you bought a AA bond which is giving you a very high YTM. And this AA bond, because the company gets re-rated and gets upgraded, becomes a AAA bond. This is a scenario, for example, in 2015, where the upgrades were higher than the downgrades. Here, you will get a kicker, because now you're getting a higher YTM with a lower risk, because now the bond has been regraded to AAA. When the fund manager invests, he looks at not only the time period for which he wants to invest, he looks at the credit risk of the portfolio, and does it merit by being in a lower credit or a riskier asset. But he also looks at what is the potential upside that is available in the bond by an upgrade or a downgrade. You now see that accrual management has different management styles. One is, where do you position yourself in the yield curve? Do you take a short-term paper, take a long-term paper? That is based purely on whether it is a flat yield curve, a normal yield curve, a steep yield curve, or an inverted yield curve. The thumb rule here is always buy the highest yield. The second look at is, are there yield anomalies because of economic cycles or because of economic events where the yield curves become humped or it becomes dipped, and positioning yourself in that humped yield curve or dipped yield curve could impact your portfolio returns. The third thing to look at is your rating spreads. Does your spread actually merit a higher risk return benefit? And if the risk return and the spreads are expanded, can you position yourself at a higher expanded spreads? The third thing you could look at is, what is the downgrade and upgrade potential? Can you buy a high yielding bond and expect this bond to be upgraded in the future so that your risk reduces? Goal of YTM or goal of accrual management is to look at these various factors while making a decision in buying a bond. I like to end with this and try to re-emphasize the three or four mediums of generating YTM. First, positioning yourself in the right yield basket based on risk return profile and yield curves. Second, making good use of spreads available in the market based on higher, lower credit. Third, can you actually look at potential upgrades of a bond and buy those bonds at a higher yield? Managing accrual is an art. It's the art of analyzing the risk embedded in the company, also ability to forecast what's going to happen in the economy. Getting both these rights will ensure that you get good accrual returns from your portfolio. Thank you for listening. I'll take questions if there are any.
Yeah, thank you, Winston. You were very elaborate and very informative. I think some questions that the viewers might have could be as the ones I'm I'll list to you, and maybe you could address them. The first one was probably when you were listing the elaborating on the M2M buying. What if the fund manager expects the interest rates to go down? Should they be buying the first a 1 year GSEC, or should they be buying a longer term GSEC? What will it be? So just to like,
I get your make question.
It yeah, crystallize it to something which is actionable.
So there are two ways. You know, you have an option to choose a fund manager based on different management styles. You have a duration management, or you have yield to YTM management. Duration management normally works when the fund manager expects interest rates to move down in the market. You know, and or there is a volatility in interest rates. Because of volatility in interest rates, the fund manager can actively manage durations. That's a good time to go into yield or into duration management. YTM normally works when the economic activity is stable. When I say stable, it is in the growth economy, which means interest rates, you know, you can see that there's going to be surplus liquidity in the future. You can see that the economy is stable. You then look at YTM, because you're expecting is based on these factors that, you know, the company you're buying right now will continue to remain like this for the next few years. So if your expectation is that, you know, yield curves are going to remain remain where they are over the next few years, you should buy YTM. However, what my experience has been, is that yield curves tend to move all over the place. And predicting where the yield curve is going to be difficult. But what I can explain to most people is the best investment attribute is diversification. Buy a little bit of accrual portfolio, buy a little bit of duration portfolio. That's what creates a good portfolio.
I think of somewhat follow-up on that could be a question where you had earlier indicated that fund managers would invest in a 1 to 10 year yield to maturity bond. So what happens for the bonds which have a longer duration? Should people completely avoid that? Should fund managers not look at that? Does that happen?
So when you look at duration, and this is a discussion about duration, it may so happen. Let me give you a classic example. In the 2009, I picked up this graph because in 2008-2009, your GSEC, which is your long bond, 10-year long bond, was at close to 9.5%. That's a pretty high yield. Now, imagine at 9.5%, you're assured for the next 10 years, you're going to get 9.5%, correct? That would be a best time to invest. Whenever yields in the market go up and you see a 10-year GSEC quoting at 8% and above, you know that's probably a good time to invest in the market. Because what you're seeing here is, no matter what happens to the interest rates in the market over a period of time, you are assured of that YTM of 8%. On the other hand, what normally happens is, on an average, the long-term 10-year GSEC has been at about between 7 to 7.2%. When you're buying at 8% and your long-term GSEC is at 7, 7.2%, you can naturally expect that the interest rates are going to go down. When your interest rates go down, automatically prices of the bond go up. Therefore, you get mega capital gains. Now, should you avoid 10-year? No. Now, let me tell you when to avoid 10-years. The time to avoid 10-years is when the 10-year GSEC is at about a 6% or 5% scenario. Because, you know, you're basically saying, I'm willing to lock in my money at 5% for the next 10 years. Now, this is way below inflation. You're actually running negative real rates. That's not a right time to invest in duration. Will at that time, will you get a 10% AAA bond or a 10% AA bond? That's a question out there. Normally, when interest rates are so low in the market, very rarely do you get even yield spreads or riskier bonds with very high yields. You know, and that's probably a time to remain in the shorter end of the market, which is a liquid or a 1 year or less than 1 year bond.
What about durations which are longer than 10 years?
You know, the Let me go to the graph I'm going to show you before. This is a graph of a normal yield curve.
Right.
You know, you I'm going to show you this graph. This is more interesting. You know, remember this is a year old graph.
It,
you,
if you notice,
it flattens out. You correct.
Right.
So you very clearly you realize that from 2028 to 2030 to 2045, you have an option to invest in 2045 also.
Right.
But there is
you
no
don't gain
much
anything kicker. Out of it.
There's not much kicker you will get by investing in a 20-year bond as you will get in investing in a 10-year bond.
What I normally tell you, there might be lesser liquidity there probably.
Not only lesser liquidity, the risk return is not in your favor.
Right.
You want to look at what we call the sweet spot in the curve. You know, if just by looking at this diagram, you will notice in this particular example, the sweetest spot in the curve is in the yield curve between 2023 to 2024 or 2025, because that's where you know you get the maximum markup for just taking, you know, like for example, if you took a 1-year bond, you'd get 6.6. If you took a 3-year bond, you'd get 7.6.
Right.
Or a little lower than 7.5. However, by you take a 5-year bond, your returns is about 1% more. So just by increasing your time horizon by 1-2 years, you could get a nice kicker. So that's why it's important. You know, when I make a statement like this, it's important to look at the yield curve and where it is. For example, if you are in a inverted yield curve, it's obviously a no-no that you shouldn't be buying a 25-year bond. So it's quite simple if you look at the yield curves.
Right. I think maybe a different question here now could be something that you had touched somewhat, which was the flattening or the steepening yield curves, and you had mentioned that liquidity was a factor. Could you elaborate on the reasons why the liquidity could go up or go down in the market?
Okay, so this is a good example. So the thumb rule here is the largest borrower in the market. You just track the largest borrower in the market, and you know where the market is going. So
okay.
For example, if you look at the equity markets, you look at what FIs are doing. You can actually predict. FIs are buying, and interest rates are going to market going to go up. Now the largest borrower in the market is the government of India.
Correct.
You just look at what the government of India is going to do.
Right.
Now, when the government of India has a higher fiscal deficit and is borrowing more, that fiscal deficit is just a factor, there can be other factors. When you find that the government of India is suddenly borrowing more, automatically, what do you expect will happen to the yield curve? The yield curve will steepen because the demand for money goes up. Correct?
Okay, right.
And that's the reason why, you know, we see that if you track two or three factors. One is the government of India demand for money. The second is the amount of liquidity available in the system. And the liquidity available in the system is based on different factors. It is an amount of deposits that are available in the system.
Right.
It is the amount of money that people have sloshing around. It can also be seasonal. For example, RBI has divided our year into busy season and lean season. Busy seasons are seasons, for example, festival times, where the demand for money goes up. Now, during this period of time, probably March, Jan, Feb, March is when the demand for money is highest. That's when the yield curves tend to steepen. On the other hand, as we progress to April, May, June, July, the yield curve will tend to flatten out. In the beginning of a financial year, when the government's fiscal situation is not so bad, the yield curves tend to flatten out. Now, these yield curves flattening and steepening can be seasonal. It can be economic cycle driven. There are many, many factors. But what I've tried to lays, just as a thumb rule, look at what's happening to the government fiscal policies, look at what's happening to government fiscal situation, and you can kind of predict where the yield curves are going.
Right. It can also depend on the risk perception, which brings me to another question. The credit risk that you indicated is an opinion of the rating agencies. Normally, in practice, does it follow the market sentiment, or is it the other way around? Do people re-rate the bonds and then do the prices go up or down? Or is it generally in common practice the prices
dictate this is a controversial question, but I would just my experience has been that most ratings are downgraded post facto, and most ratings are upgraded pre-facto, which means before the fact, the ratings get upgraded. After the fact, the rating gets downgraded.
Right.
Now, the reason that happens is because of the construct of the rating issues. You know, rating agencies are not paid by an independent regulator or public to rate the companies. Rating agencies are paid by companies to rate themselves.
Correct.
So obviously, you know, there could be I won't say conflict of interest, but you know, it's not as the price mechanism. You know, I always discuss the market price mechanism, price discovery mechanism is probably the strongest.
Correct.
Okay. It's probably the strongest because, you know, information is available in many, many pockets, while rating is probably done by a few agencies, right, and within the few agencies, a few people. So there could be information arbitrage,
right,
or asymmetry.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's how it is. You know, I'll stick my neck out and say, you know, ratings are upgraded pre-facto and are downgraded post-facto. That's the way it works.
I think one last question I have, which is again touches regulation. So you mentioned earlier that fund managers cannot invest below BBB bonds.
Yes.
Is there a cap that you have on specific instruments by the same company, or is there any such regulation which requires the fund to not invest in the own group's bonds or debentures?
Yes. So most funds cannot invest in their own group companies. And even within this, there is a limitation on 25% to a sector. As similar as it is for equity. You know, there is a limitation on the group exposure as well as on individual company exposures. This has primarily been instituted because of the current
to minimize
turmoil,
risk.
Turmoil in the market, especially since ILFS and other issues have come up. But a prudent fund manager will automatically have this incorporated within their investment process. So I'm assuming that most fund managers do have this. The scare which we normally carry on downgrades and upgrade is normally restricted to a small proportion of the portfolio. Let me put this in perspective. Okay. Imagine that you have a company, you have a fund which is 100 crores, small fund.
Right.
You know, no fund invests 100% of that 100 crores in one portfolio.
Right.
Okay, one stock. Which means it is spread across. The average, you know, on average or even worst case scenario is that there's a 5% exposure to normally one stock. Okay. Right. So imagine you have a 100 crore portfolio, you have 5% exposure to one stock. This is 5 crore. Now, that stock can get downgraded. Correct? There's a downgrade.
Correct.
And the price impact could be, let's say in this example, the price impact could be 10%. Which means your 5 rupees is now worth 4 rupees 50 paisa.
Right.
What the impact on the return of the portfolio is only 50 basis points.
Right.
The impact of the portfolio is only 50 basis points, which may mean that, you know, sometimes for a portfolio to go really bad, and that's the reason why we normally tell people invest in a mutual fund, is because here you get a portfolio of stocks. For a portfolio to get really bad, a lot of these stocks have to go bad.
Right.
Correct. Which means that if you have a portfolio that disregards exposure limits and goes to 25% in a stock, you know, and that stock drops by 10%, now your impact is 2.5%. You know, worst case also happened where, you know, they've gone down by 20% and the net exposure is 5%. But remember, if you are carrying a YTM of about 8% and you are losing 5%, you are still 3% positive.
Correct.
So it is very important that investors, when they look at portfolios, also look at this. The second caveat to this is, of course, that the company may have not defaulted.
Right.
The company may have not defaulted. Yet you could see a loss in your portfolio just by the downgrade of a company.
Correct.
Your AAA becomes AA, and the company is still paying its interest. But because of this downgrade, you know, you can see the impact of this in your portfolio, and that may also happen.
Right. I think, Winston, you've been very elaborate, very descriptive, very informative, and I'm sure the viewers out there will have plenty to take away and contemplate when they're making fixed income allocation decisions. So I would like to thank you, Winston, for taking out the time over the weeks and doing this comprehensive series on bonds. If anybody out there is looking to invest in debt or are even interested in learning about it, this series is an incredible resource. Maybe if you could have you do something else in the future as well with us.
No problem. Always available. Thank you for a good one. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Yeah, happy investing.
You. Yeah.